This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Dow. There are more than 150 youth lacrosse players in Bloomington Normal, and Matt Troha of the Illinois High School Association says he expects at least one high school team in the Twin Cities in a few years.
When we looked at the youth numbers that U.S. Lacrosse gave us, there's been a several-year span where they're just doubling year over year, especially in Illinois and the Midwest.
GLT's Brian Bloodworth reports on lacrosse, plus the music of Switchback, and Twin City educators are becoming aware of the rise in teen vaping. Colleen Reynolds reports. That and a GLT News update. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Senator Dick Durbin and 13 other colleagues are asking the FDA to better regulate companies that sell vaping products and e-cigarettes clearly marketed at kids with names like Cotton Candy and Cookies and Cream. GLT correspondent Colleen Reynolds penetrates the haze obscuring vaping's growth as the most popular tobacco product among teens and young adults. That's thanks to $63 million in traditional and social media marketing last year by major e-cigarette companies.
Hey vapers, Abby here, and it's the video you've all been waiting for. How to blow smoke rings. Today we are vaping on Alpha Vapes, the dude, because I'm obsessed with it, and it is a pineapple peach, and it is awesome.
If you think videos like what you just heard and others like it on YouTube are not having an impact, consider Ian Hoganson, a 16-year-old Bloomington High School student.
It all just kind of started probably like freshman year. I'll be going into junior when those big vape mods were a cool thing and all the smoke tricks and whatnot. Kind of no nicotine, just kind of like with the O's and whatnot. Just kind of to mess around with, nothing really harmful.
Hoganson admits he was enamored by the wafting smoke rings on those videos, but because of his self-admitted addictive tendencies, he was also sucked in for another reason.
Now it's kind of just moved on to more of the nicotine buzz with like the Juuls and whatnot. I have kind of like sparked popularity in sophomore year. It's kind of just what I use these days.
Hoganson is not alone.
Teens are more likely, some of the research right now suggests that 4 times more likely to walk into a cigarette habit.
That's Liz Hamilton, community program coordinator for Bloomington-based Chestnut Health Systems, well-respected globally in the addiction treatment field. Hamilton says the Illinois Youth Survey from this spring, an anonymous survey of 8th, 10th, and 12th graders, showed 26% of Central Illinois high school seniors and 15% of sophomores are using e-cigarettes. That's double from just 2 years ago when the state first started tracking use. Vaporizing devices come in all shapes and sizes, from custom-built bong-like devices that can blow plumes of billowing vapor to the tiniest that look like a USB drive, with the top seller referred to as a Juul, by far the most popular among teens. According to Hamilton, Juuls can deliver up to 4 times as much nicotine as a traditional cigarette, so addiction occurs faster, and she says research shows teens have no idea what they're taking in.
I've seen some recent research that suggests that 63% of the Juul users are unaware that there is nicotine in their product.
In fact, that same recent youth survey showed only about a quarter of high school students perceived vaping as harmful. Remember our 16-year-old BHS student, Ian Hoganson? He's become addicted to nicotine. But he says other kids don't seem to know or care what they're vaping.
So it's crazy how all these trending devices like a Juul can actually get kids addicted to nicotine and they don't even really notice it. They don't even really think it's a big deal. And I don't know if they know like the true definition of being an addict, but that's what a lot of these kids are becoming at my school.
Hoganson wishes he never started vaping, and he has a message for his 14-year-old brother Sam and other younger students.
You're not missing out on a lot, and the way your brain's developing, I mean, I sound like a mom, but it's really not good to get into.
Hoganson not only sounds like his mother, he sounds like the head of the Federal Drug Administration, who recently pointed out nicotine in vaping products can rewire an adolescent's brain, leading to years of addiction. Chestnut Health Systems Hamilton says most addictions do have roots in the teen years, and she argues vaping is a gateway to other tobacco use.
Teens are more likely, some of the research right now suggests that 4 times more likely to walk into a cigarette habit.
23-year-old college student Kyle Fitzgerald already had a cigarette habit by age 15. Growing up in suburban Chicago Heights, he found nicotine helped with stress and anxiety he felt in high school.
After about 3 months, you're kind of addicted to cigarettes and you like that buzz and that feeling in your head. So I was looking for something that I can do where I wouldn't get in trouble because my mom has the nose of a bloodhound.
At age 16, Kyle found his answer in the form of a vape pen that his stepfather began using to kick his addiction to chewing tobacco.
So I would go into his room and I'd take his little vape pen and I'd use it. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. This is awesome. I want my own, because he always knew when I'd use it. So I went out and I got a couple friends together and I found one of my friends who was 18 and we went to Indiana where it's cheap and really accessible.
At age 17, Fitzgerald's mom found his Sherlock Holmes style vaporizing pipe and threw it out. He returned to cigarettes because he says he could no longer invest in vaping supplies.
I think it was like $45 for just one of the smaller, like 60 milliliter bottles. That would last me probably like a week and a half. Yeah.
Now Fitzgerald is back to vaping because today's smaller devices are cheaper. Online, they go for as low as $10, including one cartridge of vape juice, and they're easier to get. Hoganson told us it's been easy to get supplies from what he describes as sketchy gas stations.
Just kind of crazy how a 13-year-old kid could walk into a gas station and get whatever they want. No IDs or whatnot.
Normal Police Chief Rick Bleichner says his agency hasn't specifically tracked violations of sales of vaping products to anyone under 18, but he plans in the future to separate out tobacco and vaping-related violations due to what appears to be, in his words, a growing problem. To date, he's not aware of any vaping sale violations. Bloomington Police Public Information Officer Elias Mendiola says he didn't have access to information about tobacco or vaping sale violations readily available, but added he's not sure the metrics will, as he put it, show anything significant.
Yeah, it's been a problem of people doing it right out in the open.
That's Bloomington High School Assistant Principal Michael Shanley, who says because students are able to use such small devices, vaping violators are getting pretty bold about sneaking ahead.
So we've had a couple instances of students doing it in the classroom. Mostly it's been in bathrooms. It's been reported students doing it in their car in the parking lot. We have had instances of a kid doing it in the cafeteria.
One enterprising company has developed a smartphone app that connects to a system to detect vapor from e-cigs. Shanley says no such drastic measures at Bloomington High School yet, but with a population of 1,500 students, the school saw 14 violations for tobacco this school year, and all were vaping-related, compared to 2 disciplinary actions against students caught vaping last school year. Shanley admits administrators were caught off guard about how fast use is growing.
We're seeing it across all demographics. We're seeing it across all socioeconomic status. You know, it's a lot of, I'm seeing a lot of different types of kids who get caught for this. It's not just one group.
In Unit 5, Normal Community High School Principal Trevor Chapman says there were 28 tobacco violations among more than 2,150 students this year, and all but 2 were vaping related. First offense results in an in-school suspension. Chapman will be working this summer on an anti-vaping campaign with Hamilton from Chestnut and the BN Parents Campus Community Committee. Chapman believes it could include embedding more information into health classes, but he thinks it should also include a student to student strategy.
I mean, students certainly react much more positively and sometimes, I would say, pay more attention when it's their peers that are providing information to them. And so we are hopeful that as students assist us in this, that the rest of our student population is more willing to listen.
Normal Community class of 2015 grad Benjamin Nielsen, now an Illinois Wesleyan University student, will be helping with that anti-vaping strategy. He's involved in a program called Always Unstoppable and visits local high schools championing individuality to give students confidence to make good choices. In high school, Nielsen didn't really have friends who vaped. Today, he knows many who do, and he says none are casual users.
I have roommates that are waking up, and the first thing they're doing before they go brush their teeth is they're sucking in nicotine from their device that's charging overnight, and it's literally one of the first things they're doing when they're waking up, and they're doing it periodically throughout the day.
Nielsen says a campaign to educate parents and teens will help, but he's convinced kids won't respond to messages about long-term health effects.
A lot of these teenagers are just thinking about the now. They've got to find a way to show short-term side effects or short-term disadvantages to vaping or the flavored nicotine.
Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin says the tobacco industry has dusted off its old cigarette marketing plan to hook another generation, which will be addicted to a new nicotine product that can be vaped. McLean County Health Department Director Camille Rodriguez stood with Durbin during a recent local news conference. Before arriving here 7 months ago, Rodriguez worked for the Wisconsin Public Health Department, heading up tobacco prevention. She worked on a campaign for parents called Tobacco is Changing.
If it's got nicotine in it, it's addictive. Some people struggle their whole lives to quit. I don't want that for my kids. So what can a parent do? Start by learning more about the new tobacco products out there. Get involved and make sure your kids know sweet flavors don't make tobacco products any safer or less addictive. Tobacco's changing, parents. We've got to keep up.
For teenagers, Rodriguez says appealing to their vanity, in a way turning a mirror on bad visuals with vapors, might make an impact.
Teeth coloring and watery, itchy eyes can be all a part of the after effects. And we know how our young people love to be on Instagram and do selfies. And so if you even used that sort of take on the matter, you could definitely perhaps make some headway.
Amanda Hoganson, Ian's mom, thinks the school's zero tolerance policies are good. And she believes for the novice user, anti-vaping campaigns can help. For students like her son who are already addicted, her strategy has been to call him out on his use, encourage a better alternative such as exercise, and hope for the best.
They're still going to do it. And what I hope for mine is that it's just a phase and that it will end, but with little to no side effects health-wise.
Someone who says he's in better health today because of vaping won't debate the science, but shares his personal positive experience of switching from cigarettes to vaping. Chris Hyatt, a 30-year-old Normal Community West High School grad, started his Liquid Temptations vaping juice business 4 years ago at a time when he weighed nearly 300 pounds and felt like he was having a heart attack. He quit smoking, started vaping, and now Hyatt is a mixologist of sorts, creating vaping liquid for handheld mods and larger devices. Hyatt has perfected concoctions with names such as Crunch Cake and Uproar, described as a grape frozen sorbet taste. He supplies several of Bloomington Normal's 13 stores specifically selling tobacco and vaping products. He makes some juices without any nicotine and says he limits nicotine content to no more than 6 milligrams in a 60-milliliter bottle. For reference, one cigarette has between 8 and 20 milligrams. Like many advocates, Hyatt comes from the position of reducing harm, but he's not ready to definitely claim vaping is healthier than smoking. However, Hyatt says he feels better.
I quit smoking, like, oh my God, I was able to start eating better, start exercising. I run miles now where I couldn't run a half mile before. So it's definitely helped change my life for the better and a lot of other people I know.
Hyatt counts his own mother, a smoker for decades, as one of his success stories. However, federal regulators say there is not enough evidence using e-cigarettes are an effective way to stop smoking. And so far, no vaping or e-cigarette companies have applied for FDA approval for smoking cessation use. Still, Chris Hyatt says his home base of the Smoker's Den in downtown Bloomington sees a lot of elderly patients who were longtime smokers who have now started vaping. After a few months, he says, they come in unassisted instead of using walkers. But aren't they just transferring one addiction to another?
They will come in and they will get an e-cig set up and they will vape it. And once their nicotine's dropped from a higher level to a lower level, they're done with it altogether.
Hyatt understands the argument that vaping could be creating a new generation of addicts, but he insists his business doesn't market to kids and that his higher price point at $200 or more for a device acts as a deterrent. Still, Hyatt, who has two small children, would be okay with some additional regulation.
The label's not catering towards children. You know, we did our best to build a brand to where it's definitely more adult geared. We're okay with the warning label being on the bottle. We don't care that it takes up promotional space for our company.
Hyatt opposes raising the age for sale of vaping products to 21. He says that'll only drive younger customers to the black market and to neighboring states. 25 Illinois cities, including Peoria and Chicago, have already restricted sale of tobacco and vaping products to adults 21 and older. A bill to impose the age limit statewide is on Governor Rauner's desk. If he signs it, Illinois would join five other states that have already raised the age to 21. The governor's office says he's reviewing the legislation along with 600 other bills on his desk, and Rauner hasn't made any public statements on the subject. The Illinois Department of Revenue estimates the impact could reduce Illinois sale tax receipts by $41 to $48 million in the first year. Meanwhile, Dick Durbin continues to collect evidence, and he's urging the FDA not to wait to stop companies from hooking kids with flavored vaping juices and alluring marketing.
While the jury is out on this conversion from combustible tobacco to vaping as to whether that actually is a legitimate purpose for this product, the vigor and commitment of the industry in hooking our kids is unmatched.
In a letter to school superintendents in May, Durbin asks them to provide him with data about the extent of vaping in middle and high schools and solicited suggestions for what Congress should do legislatively to prevent kids from becoming addicted. Chestnut Health's Linda Hamilton says legislation restricting sales and marketing to kids is needed, but reaching children with the right message could really make an impact.
Some sort of a message that shows a Juul and some of the other vaping devices that says something along the lines of, pick me up, I will rule you. And that is the last thing that a teenager that's developing independent wants, is for something else or someone else to control them.
Meanwhile, the Food and Drug Administration's plan is not to issue any new regulations on vaping until 2020. I'm Colleen Reynolds.
And I'm Ryan Denham. This is Sound Ideas. Illinois State University's Mennonite College of Nursing has received a nearly $3 million grant to teach nursing students more about prevention. GLT's Mary Cullen talks with Community Healthcare Clinic Executive Director Angie McLaughlin about the program's impact at local medical facilities.
Angie McLaughlin says that looking at where the healthcare system is going as a whole is really looking at wellness and keeping people healthy and productive members of their community. Historically, it has been focused on sickness, and when you're sick, you go to the doctor. And so the role of nursing is really driving some of that and is really supporting that in a very important way. And so by having a registered nurse care coordinator embedded here at the clinic can help us really structure more care coordination, more patient support, and more focus on prevention and wellness for all the patients we serve.
And so what exactly will this program do for Community Health and the two other partners that are involved in this?
We're really looking at adding a full-time registered nurse care coordinator. That position is funded through that grant. So when you look at a small nonprofit like myself, Chestnut Health Systems, which is a federally qualified health center, and then of course the local McLean County Health Department, all of us are really looking at funding and how we can support and be the most efficient, well-run program with the most, you know, maximizing resources. And so by having an embedded care coordinator that is funded through the this position, we're going to be able to not only expand capacity, clinical capacity with our nurse practitioners, but provide more well-rounded quality healthcare to those that we have here. And so by having this embedded care coordinator also be a part of this larger project tied to academia, tied to other clinics, we're not only going to be a model for how to engage with the academics, but we're also going to be how to provide preventative healthcare on a really smart scale in terms of efficiencies in Central Illinois. So I'm really excited that it's going to not only expand clinical care at the clinic, but it's also going to be part of a much broader teaching opportunity for both the university and our community.
So this preventative practice model, is this being practiced in other counties outside of McLean?
Healthcare in general, there are some health systems and some larger hospital systems that are looking at this preventative model. We do have care coordinators embedded in some of our local private practices and our hospital affiliations, and they are definitely seeing a return on that investment of having the increased support and nursing staff within the walls. This brings it to not only a free clinic, a federally qualified health center, and also a local health department. So basically, it does take that model and expand it into different areas of practice in different settings, which is really exciting.
And with this new project in place, specifically here at CHCC, what will these nurses likely be doing?
Our care coordinator position will be looking at supporting our chronic disease patients, and we'll be looking at what we call care planning. So those patients that are most complex, that have the most barriers to overcoming healthcare, and then also some of those obstacles that they may be looking at that are preventing them from being a healthy individual. And so we're really going to focus on diabetes, hypertension. We also know that those diseases not only take some medication and some management, but also some lifestyle changes and coaching and helping. And so our care coordinator is going to be tied in with those most complex patients to help them overcome their barriers, help them lead a healthy lifestyle, and hopefully reduce their chronic disease indicators so that they are healthier and functioning in our community.
So taking it up to a broader perspective, what exactly is preventative care?
Preventative care is really looking at what you can do as an individual and what you can do with your healthcare team to ensure that any of your risk factors are reduced. So looking at screenings for cancer, looking at making sure that your diet, your physical activity levels, labs, testing, getting some of that done on a regular basis so that your medical provider can identify any potential risks of chronic disease or of other health issues and help you address them and reduce those risks moving forward. And so that's really, again, what our care coordinator here is going to be working on, not only those patients that are complex, helping them reduce some of the barriers, but also looking at, with our other population, what can we do to keep them healthy before they get sick and have an acute health crisis.
And it may be kind of self-explanatory, but can you get to the idea of why this is so important?
This project is really important on two different levels. One, at the community level, what the $2.8 million coming into our community is going to enhance what's going on at Mennonite College of Nursing and the things that they're doing and their programming. It's going to enhance the clinical care that we're all delivering in the clinic sites. And then it's also a model for other communities and other either academic institutions to really look at nursing in a new way in terms of how those nursing students are coming out better prepared for a preventive model of care as opposed to hospital and sickness.
So the McLean County Health Department is saying that 26% of people living below 200% of poverty are uninsured in McLean County. How will this program at Mennonite College of Nursing impact the uninsured?
Well, at the clinic here, it's certainly going to impact them in a very positive way. Last year alone, we served over 1,000 uninsured, underserved individual adults here in McLean County. And we know that having an embedded RN care coordinator is going to improve those efficiencies so that our nurse practitioner hours, our volunteer provider hours, they're going to be able to really spend the time during a clinical exam really driving and assessing and driving the care. And then that care coordinator is going to be able to come in and support that care, support the patient through any obstacles. And it's really going to improve our exam patient provider time, which is going to allow us personally at the clinic to serve more patients over the next year.
In that same statement from the McLean County Health Department, they mentioned the impact on those 65 and older, so elderly patients within McLean County. How will it impact that population?
That's definitely a question for Chestnut Health Systems and the McLean County Health Department, only because at the clinic, we serve the uninsured, so they're up to 64, and most of them can transfer into Medicare once they reach the age of 65. But again, if any of the health department or Chestnut Health Systems are serving the elderly, it's going to be exactly the same, that they're going to get more robust care coordination with their providers through this program.
Okay, great. And what does the timeline look like for implementing this program?
Well, with any great grant program, you hit the ground running. We were notified by Dean Judy Newbrander that they had received the grant, and that was right before July 4th. So we already have a few planning meetings scheduled. We're going to start looking at what all the sites need to do to be prepared to have this position, and then also how does it team with the academic side at Illinois State University to make sure that the academics and what they're learning is then translated into real world applied knowledge here at the clinic. So planning's already underway. We look really forward to working with them. You know, it was fun just putting the grant together with this team. And so now implementing it, I know we're all going to work really well together. And hopefully this time next year, we have our full-time embedded care coordinator and are talking about outcomes and results.
Okay, great. And then any final comments about this project that I might not have asked you about that would be important for our listeners?
I think what's really important and special about this project is that it is a true community collaborative. And not just, yeah, we're going to a meeting and we're sharing information, but it is academia really looking at ways that they can better prepare their students. And I can tell you from everything that I have learned about the healthcare system and everything that we know at a national level, that these nursing students coming out of this program and having this amazing opportunity to be embedded care coordinators, to teach and learn, they are going to come out heads and tails above the rest of the nursing class in the across the country. So we really look forward to watching those students come through and having the clinic being a learning site for them.
Mary Collins spoke with Community Healthcare Clinic Executive Director Angie McLaughlin. This is Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT comes from Community Players Theater, presenting Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, a timely and timeless biblical saga set to an engaging cornucopia of musical styles. Details and tickets at communityplayers.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Coming up in a few minutes, GLT correspondent Brian Bloodworth looks at the growing sport of lacrosse in Bloomington Normal. But first, an increasing number of older Americans are choosing to age in place and continue living in their own homes instead of moving to nursing facilities. As IPR's Shayla Farzan reports, the high cost of in-home care means the burden of caregiving often falls on family members.
Sharon Wade slices watermelon into small chunks at the kitchen table, keeping an eye on her mom, Martha, through the doorway. Her mom reclines in an oversized armchair, listening to music through a pair of headphones. The 86-year-old is physically handicapped and has dementia. Wade puts an arm around her mom's waist and helps her slowly shuffle to the table.
All right, young lady, we're going to go to the kitchen and eat our lunch, okay?
The two live in Delwood, just east of Ferguson. Wade's been caring for her mom full-time since retiring from her job at a bank last fall. For about 12 hours a day, she takes care of all of her needs, from bathing to making sure she takes her medication.
Did it go down? Mm-hmm. Say ah.
Wade says she feels very protective of her mom. Even if they could afford to hire help, she's not sure she'd feel comfortable leaving her with strangers. Sometimes a family member will stop by, so she can take some time for herself. Even a trip to the grocery store feels like a big deal.
It feels like freedom. Like, wow, I get to stay out a couple of hours and not worry about my mom.
Wade's situation isn't unique. Not only are people living longer lives, but more older adults are now choosing to live at home instead of going to nursing facilities. That means more elderly adults to care for. Marla Bergweger is a professor of social work at St. Louis University. She says the burden of caregiving usually falls on one person, and these caregivers often have a hard time caring for themselves.
They may let hobbies go. They may let exercise go. They may let their nutrition go. So it's not unheard of that the caregiver becomes ill or even dies before the person that they're caring for because they've just tried to power through their own health issues.
Not only do caregivers struggle to take care of themselves, she says they often feel unprepared for the physical and emotional demands they face.
There historically isn't a lot of training for this. And, you know, you may become a caregiver gradually, but you may also literally overnight become a caregiver.
Memory Care Home Solutions, a St. Louis nonprofit, is trying to fill that need by providing one-on-one training for caregivers of elderly family members with dementia. The organization pairs families with occupational therapists who teach them hands-on ways to care for loved ones and for themselves. Their program director, Jill Sigliana, says it's like becoming a new parent.
There are these great experts who can teach you and be your coach as you learn this new role of parenting.
Sigliana says they give advice to caregivers and try to help them understand that what they're experiencing is typical.
We get to come along and say, this is normal. These are normal dementia symptoms, and you're not the only person experiencing this.
Back in Delwood, Sharon Wade has been working with an occupational therapist from Memory Care for the past several months. Wade says she helped her get an alarm so she'd wake up if her mom got out of bed in the night. And she says she's also gotten some ideas for keeping her mom active, physically and mentally. In the afternoons, the two of them sit on the couch and practice spelling words out loud.
What about California?
C-A-L-I-F-I-O-R-E-N-I.
Yes.
She says taking care of her mom can be really hard, but she feels like it's what she's meant to be doing.
I'll comb her hair, and she'll say, "Oh, that feels so good." And anything that makes her happy, it makes me happy. I just want her to try to enjoy her life as best she can.
There are good days and bad days, but Wade says she finds joy in the little things that they can still do together, like singing.
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
I'm Shayla Farzon.
Lord, have mercy on me.
After a break, hear from a musical duo that's bringing their Irish Americana music to ISU's Quad next week. This is GLT's Sound Ideas.
With midterm elections around the corner, keeping up with the headlines this political season can seem like a chore.
Democrats need 23 seats on net to take back control of Congress.
A teacher has defeated the Kentucky State House majority leader in the Republican primary.
All Things Considered gives you the context and analysis and news you need without all the noise. Hear the bigger picture every afternoon.
I'm GLT All Things Considered host Mike McCurdy. Join me weekdays from 3 to 6 p.m. on GLT.
Support for GLT comes from Normal Parks and Recreation. ConnieLink Amphitheater's concert series presents the Perellis Project, a jazz ensemble performing music inspired by some of the most influential musicians of the bebop era and onward. July 12th at 6 p.m. Details at normalparks.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Lacrosse is a Native American game originating on the East Coast in the 1700s. It has slowly made its way to the Midwest. Small colleges such as Illinois Wesleyan University are using it to stay competitive in recruiting students. Now even high schools are picking it up. GLT's Brian Bloodworth reports.
That's not the sound of Illinois Wesleyan's football team taking the field. It's the Titans men's lacrosse team before a recent game. Men's team coach Zach Iannucci says IWU was not an early adopter or a late comer.
We were
kind of in the middle of when the school started. We're in our fifth year, so we were a little bit later. It's really grown fast.
Lacrosse is a team sport played with a hollowed metal stick that varies in length with a butterfly net type glove on the end. The players use the stick to carry, pass, catch, control, and shoot the 2-ounce soft rubber lacrosse ball into the opposing team's goal. Iannucci says each goal is worth 1 point.
I guess you'd call it like a mix of many sports. So you got hockey in there, you've got some football, some soccer. It's fast, it's physical, it's a lot of fun to play, a lot of fun to watch. Hockey's probably the closest that if someone doesn't know the sport.
The games last an hour. Will Harris is a freshman goalie for the Titans.
It's called the fastest sport on 2 feet for a reason, and it's fast-paced, lots of goals, lots of excitement.
Harris began playing the sport in third grade. He says the speed of the game makes it fun.
There's so many parts of it that are fun, but being a goalie, kind of last line of defense is something that I've always got like an adrenaline rush from it, but playing goalie, I mean, you gotta have some kind of crazy to step in cage. Brutal position. Bruised and battered all over from taking shots off the knee, taking shots off the thigh, arms all over the place. Labor of love.
Let's go! Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
Senior midfielder Nick Winter says the 110-yard, 65-foot men's field basically has three sections.
Offensive end, you have three attackmen that have to stay on the offensive end. Then you have three midfielders who can run the length of the field, and then you have defenders who have to stay on the defensive ends.
Players wear shoulder and elbow pads, gloves, and helmets. Coach Iannucci says it gets physical.
It's more of a contact sport, not a collision sport. Like, football is very much a collision sport. There is contact. Like, you can hit each other with your stick. You see some big hits sometimes, but, like, a couple in a game, not like football where it's every play. It's a much safer, just because it's not the goal of each play to take somebody to the ground.
Let's go, Jay!
Oh, yeah! Oh, yeah!
Full contact is a feature of the men's game, but not so much in the women's game. Lindsay Keller coaches the women for Wesleyan.
There's a little bit of contact, so we can make contact. Your stick can't touch their body, but you can put contact on from a defensive positioning point of view with your body and their body. So it's kind of similar, I would say, to the contact that you may see in basketball.
Keller says there are other differences in the women's game. For one, the field is 120 yards long, there is a 90-second possession clock, and 12 players are on the field rather than 10.
I don't know where the differences started at. With the Native Americans starting the sport, they were all men. Only males played it. In Scotland is where they started kind of the women's side, and so I think the games have been very different.
Keller, like Iannucci, grew up and played lacrosse in college on the East Coast.
Zach equated men's lacrosse more to hockey, where it's a little bit quicker like that. Women's lacrosse is growing to be quicker. We've actually just introduced a possession clock, which has sped the game up a little bit. It's faster than soccer, but it's not quite as fast as men's lacrosse.
Players from across the country sprinkle the men's and women's rosters, but Iannucci says the majority hail from the Chicago suburbs.
We do a lot of our recruiting out of the suburbs, and the sport has grown, and the level of player has really grown as well, and that's been really helpful for us as we've continued to grow our program.
Keller says the girls' game is growing as well.
The one thing that we compete with in the state of Illinois is that soccer is in the same season, whereas in other states it's not. You know, if that ever changes, that would be really nice, and I think we'd get more interest from the girls' side.
No high schools in the Bloomington-Normal area currently field lacrosse teams, but the sport is growing throughout Illinois. Matt Troha of the Illinois High School Association says the IHSA added it to the state tournament series this year.
When we looked at the youth numbers that U.S. lacrosse gave us, there's been a several-year span where they're just doubling year over year, especially in Illinois and the Midwest. So we just kind of looked at that and said, hey, the numbers are here. These kids are playing, and they're going to be in high school soon. And, you know, to provide them that participation opportunity is something we wanted to do.
In this year's state tournament series, 78 boys and 58 girls teams played for championships. The only downstate schools are Dunlap on the boys' side and O'Fallon on the girls' side. Troha says the IHSA expects more teams next year.
We're excited about the growth. The Peoria area looks like it could have as many as 3 to 4 teams as early as next year. You know, we anticipate Bloomington Normal area should have a team. You know, we think the Quad Cities will, Springfield, Champaign did in the past, and we expect that to come back.
How soon does Troha see a team from Bloomington Normal in the state series?
I would hope in maybe 3 years, probably 5 maybe is a safe estimate. But I would be really surprised if they're not a high school team there within 5 years.
Both Iannucci and Keller say the games are appealing.
You'll love it if you watch it. You might not have any idea what's going on at first, but I mean, it's a lot of fun. It's a really lot of fun.
Again, like in hockey, you may not know all the rules or why they're doing certain things, but it catches on and it's fast moving and it's exciting, which I think is probably the best part, is that it's a faster sport.
I'm Brian Bloodwood.
There are currently a combined 150 male and female players ranging in age from 10 to under through high school in the Bloomington Warriors Club organization. This is Sound Ideas. This is Sound Ideas. The musical duo Switchback is a little bit bluegrass, a little bit Irish, but don't let that description lull you into an Irish lullaby. Brian Fitzgerald and Marty McCormick say what they're doing is really a musical highwire act, making a lot more sound than you'd expect from just two guys on a stage. They've been together more than 30 years and play together year-round, including opening up for the Chieftains. I caught up with Switchback ahead of Monday's show at Illinois State University's Concerts on the Quad.
A lot of people who know us enjoy the fact that we kind of mix this our American roots with Irish music and kind of come up with this real high energy hybrid. The fun thing about it is it feels like you're being played to by a very full band.
I tried to rise, but I was not able. Nancy had me by the knees. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy, whiskey. Whiskey, whiskey, Nancy,
oh. And that's part of the visual enjoyment of it is that there's just two guys working away up there on stage with stomp boxes, mandolin, guitar, and bass, and vocal. It's almost kind of like a musical high wire act, if you will.
This is Brian speaking now. The other thing that people tell us is that when they listen to our Americana music, they can hear that sort of it's tinged with the Celtic feeling. And then when we do the Irish stuff, they get this bluegrass thing coming off of it.
Well, my understanding is you guys started out playing traditional Irish music up in the Chicago area. I'm from the south side of Chicago myself, where there is no shortage of Irish pubs. Given that background of where you started, how would you describe, what's so special about Irish music? What is it about that energy, that excitement that's attracted you guys to it for so long?
The one word that always comes up for me is tribal. I think that what it does is Celtic music has that resonance in our DNA. Doesn't matter if you're Irish or not. It's kind of like African drumming or, something like that, where you just feel a sense of something that is undefinable but goes back, way back when. And I think that's what Celtic music has held on to. There's an adrenaline-like kind of surge that most people get when they listen to jigs and reels and some of those fast paced song. And I think that, for me, that's what I believe is why that music is so popular and why when somebody sees something like, Riverdance or some of these big spectacles, it really, really resonates with them because it goes back to that ancient feeling that we all have. And it's just part of us.
It was such an important part of what we could bring to the table in a live performance situation, and I thought, my God, this is so much better playing traditional Irish music to fire up an audience, to make them receptive to the music, the original stuff that we were presenting. It was a perfect marriage, because it's very tough to just confront a brand new audience and play them your original material. But with the Irish music, there is, in our suit, it was like having the trump, it was... It made for them to finally get used to our own compositions. And some of these compositions were Irish in nature, too. And some of them were more Americana, but didn't matter then. They became Switchback bands. The Irish music spearheaded a lot of that.
I have served on a Yankee sailing ship. Davy Crockett is her name.
And Burgess is the captain of her. They say she is a float in hell. So fare thee well, my own true love. And when I return, united we will be. It's not the leaving of Liverpool that grieves me, but my darling, when I think of thee.
We take people on tour over to Ireland every year, mainly Americans, but some Europeans join us as well, and Canadians. That said, fun for them to see how the Irish respond to our music, because what's so nice about it is that they love that feeling of mountain music, the wild kind of bluegrass kind of feeling, which I think resonates quite well with the Irish people. They like that, and they genuinely like the idea of the fact that their music comes back to them not the same. It's a high compliment, I think, you know, for most of them to see us playing their music, but in a completely different style.
You know, it's tough for any musical partnership to last as long as your guys has. I want to ask, how have you managed it and kind of nurtured that relationship along the way so that you're still together, you're still producing music, and you still stand each other enough to tour like you guys do?
Yeah, it's a well-known fact that duos don't fare well over time, you know, and I think the fact that Marty's from a family of 10, I'm from a family of 9 children, I think part of it, that comes into the equation because we've had to deal with our siblings in a way and, you know, not always get our way. And
so you're used to compromise, in other words.
Yeah, there's got to be a compromise. And, you know, and we're aware of when we're getting to the boiling point, we kind of back off. Like, Mario will go back to Illinois, I'll stay in Iowa, or the other way around, you know. All right, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. No, it works out. You know, we have very understanding wives, and that helps a lot. Kind of keeps things in a neutral. You want to keep kind of a neutral mind about things. You know, that's very important. You know, I think that's one of the marvels of Switchback is that we've been working this long, you know, in a very difficult business.
Performing July 16th at Illinois State University, a part of the Concerts on the Quad Summer Series. Picture it's a hot summer night. You've got sunset just around the corner. The quad is filled with people. I guess, where do you guys start a show like that to introduce yourselves to a community like this?
You know, we'll pick one of the tunes that kind of is a hybrid between the two. Like Brian's referring to Rocky Mountain Express off of Kanoka.
Deep in the heart of mine.
You know, has a little bit of that Celtic drive and has a little bit of that twang, and that seems to get everybody going. The audience, you know, we're very direct with them. We want a reaction and we want their feedback, and so it's a collective. That's the joyous part about it. It's really a collective experience. You know, people come out of our concert feeling like we play directly to them, but also we feel like, you know, the feedback that we get is totally rewarding. It's a lot of fun.
That's my conversation with Brian Fitzgerald and Marty McCormick from Switchback. The Celtic Americana duo plays Monday night at 7 at Illinois State University's Concerts on the Quad. Thanks for listening to Sound Ideas today on WGLT Normal. Our website is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Mary Cullen, Colleen Reynolds, and Brian Bloodworth. WGLT.org is the first place to go to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. You can also check it out at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Post comments at facebook.com/WGLTFM or tweet your comments using the hashtag Sound Ideas. We're all at WGLT News and I'm at Ryan WGLT. Let's hear a bit more from Switchback's song Rocky Mountain Express.
stay far away from you. There remained a flickering flame, the only guide I had to get me through. Ooh. I can hear you call.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. Bloomington Normal's public media.